Oh, boy. Do we really have to have a program? Couldn't we just keep that going and do a little partying? Okay, bye. Okay. That's the WDR Big Band of Kern, Germany, with Pan Woman, a wonderful, wonderful throwback for me to my native home of Trinidad. That's by noted arranger Ray Holman, and featuring steel pianist Andy Narell, also from Trinidad. So it's a nice little blend, and with some jazz thrown in for a good measure. So there we go. It's a little wink and a nod to Labor Day festivities that are coming up on Monday on Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn, although I hear that the local precinct, the 77th precinct, has already just peppered the community with leaflets warning of arrests for quality of life crimes. That's from the WDR's 1997 album, Caribbean Night. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Friday, Free Your Mind Friday, right here on PRN.FM. And, of course, based on the events of the past week alone, I'd say there's a lot to talk about. But this is the time to unboggle your boggled mind. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's get things started. My job is to just be the traffic cop today. I'm directing traffic, and it's about you taking the conversation where you want it to go. From California, Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, magnificent Eutrice.
Hello, equally magnificent Harvey. What are you saying today?
Well, I have some very good news for everybody. And the good news is that it's not the same old game. It used to be easy to control populations by controlling the mindscape. Do you remember this guy Berlusconi in Italy?
Sure.
And
did we lose Harvey? Oh, I think we lost Harvey. Let's see if we... What happened, Harvey? We lost you. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's see where we're going. I'm so sorry about that. I don't know how that happened. Harvey, your state had an earthquake and all kinds of things are happening now because of it. We can't keep in touch with each other like we used to. What's going on? 888-874-4888. Okay. Are you back, Harvey?
Yes, magnificent Eutrice.
What happened there? All right, continue.
Well, you know, there was a guy like Berlusconi, and, you know, that was the key to controlling the people, was to run the newspapers, the media, own the television stations, and then it was easy. But now we live in a different kind of world. We live in a quantumly entangled world electronically. I read an article that said as of 2013, there were more cell phones and tablets on the planet than there were people. And, of course, we have the World Wide Web. And I'd like to talk a little bit of quantum entanglement. Quantum entanglement is essentially the study of the smallest particles in our universe. There's electrons, photons. And this weird phenomenon exists called entanglement, where if two electrons or photons are entangled with each other, around each other, when separated, no matter how far, even across the universe, when you affect one, the other is instantaneously affected. Like if you flip the polarity on one, the other will go the other way. So this phenomenon is actually used in electronics today. It's employed, but they don't quite understand it. And if our scientists are right about the Big Bang theory, that the universe sprang forth from a primordial atom, from one atom, a super dense atom, then we are all entangled. The universe is entangled. We are one. We are with everything. So I feel that we're doing that electronically. And you notice on TV or the media, it's everything is brought to you like up and personal. Like, you know, like take the Israeli-Palestinian war. I mean, they're there every day. They're bringing you the latest results on spot broadcasts. I mean, there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. We have satellites overhead, drones, and everything like that. So it's very hard for guys like dictators to run the same old game. And I believe it's corporations now versus kingdoms. Kingdoms used to want to expand their territory physically to gain resources and land, But corporations are different. Corporations want to expand their marketplaces. There's no need for physical or subjugation. They have advertising. The multinational corporations are vying over territory, and they don't like to see their infrastructure damaged because that reduces profits. And the multinational corporations, they run the world now, and they're trying to get even more control with treaties like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So that's the way it is. They don't want to see destruction. And even though we're seeing in the Islamic world images of a lot of turnover, that I believe what's happening there is that these guys who control those local environments, like in Syria, they've lost control. They've lost control. Everybody's entangled. Everybody's connected. Facebook is the biggest thing. People want entanglement. And that's the good news, that we are
one. All right. I'll take it.
Thank you very much, Yutis. Love
Thank you for calling, Harvey. From Brooklyn, Desiree, you're on the air.
Hi, Yutis.
Hello. You're on the air.
Hi. Good day. How are you?
Fine. Thank you. I hope you're well.
Yes. Thank you. I just wanted to ask you a political question. I am volunteering for the Hawkins for Governor campaign, and I'm wondering if you would have him on your show, because people that are involved in politics are supporting him. He has a good support group, but some people that maybe watch CNN or read the Daily News aren't aware of his candidacy.
Oh, that's an unusual thing. We are in the process of trading ideas here, but okay. I don't know about Mr. Hawkins, and you know, I'll just find out whether it is something that the audience might be interested in hearing.
Oh,
but,
well, thank you.
I mean, we generally don't, you know, you're running for this and you're running for that. You know, that's generally not been my focus at all on this program.
Right. Well, the exposure is great wherever you can get it, and he's the Green Party candidate, so he is definitely for the people.
Well, yes. I mean, technically, of course, everybody would say they're for the people. I don't know anybody who's going to be running saying I'm against the people.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would say they're for the people. So let's say, you know, it's something that is worthy of consideration.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. From Atlanta, John, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Yutis.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. You know, you got one of the best shows, and you educate the people, and I love you.
Well, thank you.
I know we don't always agree, but, you know, I love Alton Maddox. I love Reverend Sharpton, but I love Alton Maddox more. And I love him because he's a real man, and he's a real African. And, you know, Mr. Treese, the two young guys who died in Syria of African American descent who were supposed to be fighting for ISIL, I would just like to juxtapose if all the people on the globe are fighting for their independence and their culture and their tradition and their history and their survival. I'm a patriot. I'm a clergy and a medical doctor, and I love America, but people could die in Ferguson. They could die on Staten Island fighting for the right of black grandmothers, black babies, and black kids. Am I advocating anything that any other race is not advocating? The survival of their genetic code? So what I'm saying is Dr. John Henry Clark, who had a lot of respect for you and a lot of respect for Alton Maddox and a lot of respect for Reverend Sharpton, nobody foreseen the future that the questions that the late, great Dr. Clark asked our leaders. Where are you leading us? Where are you leading us? So when I listen to your show and others, I realize that the truth has a way of radiating and rising to the top. And it cannot be bought for $1 billion or $10 billion.
Oh, so thank you, John. Thank you for your call today. I appreciate that.
Take care.
Thank you so much. from Texas, Sarah. How you doing?
Greetings to you, Yutri.
Thank you, and same to you.
Yes, Yutri, and greetings as well to the PRN audience. And I will tack on a little bit on what that last caller just said in regards to where it is that we are really trying to get to. And it also brought me back in mind to the two journalists that was played up in the media so much as of late in Syria, the one that was released as well as the one that was allegedly beheaded. And I get back to the whole point of this, you treat as well as the young black male that they said was a recent convert to Islam and was supposedly killed in the line of duty, fighting on one of those sides. You don't even know which, because they're all, to me, starting to get kind of murky to be one and the same. But my whole point on this that I'm trying to get to you, Treece, is that they have made so much about this young man, and which is why, to me, when that video was released saying that he was beheaded, and my gut instinct told me...
Are you talking about James Foley?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
My gut instinct told me that this is going to be another Ambassador Stevens type deal where United States is going to use this as a catalyst in order within which to get back into the game. Because before they couldn't get into the game last year, the year before, as a result of getting into Syria. But now that we have this person supposedly beheaded, and then the individual who did the beheading, he has a British-sounding accent, so you know he came somewhere from out of the UK. So therefore, now that the UK could use it as a rallying point, and the United States could use it as a rallying point, because it's a citizen of the United States, so now therefore it is time for us to do something, because you notice with all of the press releases, the president, he spent a whole lot of time talking about this young man. You know, he was strictly focused on that. National defense and ISIS, and then of course the what's going on with the Christian sect that is being driven out. This whole thing thinks that it reeks the high heavens, you treat, because I, as a person in the military, and I've dealt with bodies. I worked in mortuary affairs, and I've dealt with bodies. You know, people blow their heads off, ran over. You know, you name it. What kind of bodies I've seen them, and that video that they showed, and I looked at it. That was as fake as you can get. That male head was not beheaded, because you cannot behead somebody's head off with a knife. And I'm a country girl. I grew up on a farm, you trees. I've killed, you know, animals, you know, big animals from cows, goats, sheep, you know, chickens, donkey chickens, and all those sort of things. And you know, when you're trying to behead an animal and the amount of blood and gore that's normally around there, what I saw there, it was nothing close to what you would see if a person gets beheaded. You get a bullet to the head on an individual, it showed more blood than what you saw with that man's head supposedly severed and laid on top of his back. And I'm saying that all to say is that these things are played in our emotions over here, and we are led to believe that, okay, now the United States is going to say this is the rallying point, because before it wasn't a U.S. citizen that was killed. Now we have a focus. Because now this person got killed, just like with Ambassador Steve, where they spent millions of dollars and a lot of hearings in order to get to the bottom, which they already know, come to find out the man was working for the CIA, just as these two young men were. They were props working for the government in doing spreading disinformation and getting information back to the United States. They were not journalists, as they so-called are being alleged to be.
Well, you're raising points that are in play, in vigorous play, I should say. You know, people are making the same points. But first of all, I couldn't stomach the idea of watching the video, so I just couldn't do it. Secondly, we do know that even his parents, James Foley's parents, have certified that, yes, it was their son who was killed. And
did they get the body back?
I'm sorry?
Have they received his remains?
No, they have not received his remains. The remains have not been sent. So, I mean, the issue is just the same. As awful as it was, their parents said that they believed that he was in fact beheaded. They believed that it was in fact their son. And they also believed that he had been resigned to his fate, and that they did not, although his brother did say that he believed the United States should have done more. But we do have a situation to consider, too. In cases of war, when a country decides to go to war, it is usually a large objective that is before them. The president has said, much to his chagrin, that there is no, quote, strategy. We have no strategy yet in Syria or that part of the world. And that, of course, he's going to have to deal with the fallout from that. But in war, everything is at play, and everybody's lying. That's the first thing you have to assume. Everybody is lying in one way or the other. So we have to accept everything in that light. Everybody is lying. Hamas had said that it had nothing to do with the abduction and murder of the three Israeli teenagers. And then recently they said, well, yes, we had something to do with it. So you have no way of putting 100% credibility in anybody. So our position should be just wait and see until enough information again becomes available that allows us to make an intelligent choice. And even so, we still will have to take the position that everybody is up to something. Everybody's up to manipulating the public. Everybody is. The ISIS people are, or the Islamic State, as they're calling themselves now, the U.S. government is, the British are doing exactly the same thing. Everybody has a stake in deceiving the populace.
That is quite true, Eutrice, but what I'm looking at with this whole thing is that, first of all, the rebel forces, that all of these things that were put together, this was all a part of the United States and their European allies who put these people together. Now that they have broken off into all different factions, from ISIL to ISIS to all of the Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Al-Qaeda, you know, in Africa, Boko Haram, you know, these are all groups that were funded, because you cannot tell me that these
groups... Yes, of course they were funded. They were all created. They were created.
But
at the same time, it is not nearly as simple as that. Yes, they were created, but there also came into play a number of factions having their own agendas within that context. They all agreed to take the money from Britain. They all agreed to take the money from the United States and the weapons and all of that.
Saudi Arabia and whoever else was the bad person. But you see, it goes to show that you cannot contain a volatile group of people whose agenda is very limited in scope to yours. And what you are seeing now, this chaos that's being let loose and spread all over the globe, the point is, who benefits from it? The only people who benefit from this, Eutrice, is the West. It comes right back to the West.
Because I would take issue with that. I say there's a lot. There are a lot of people who are benefiting. The West it had envisioned, and it always, I mean, historically, it has always miscalculated its actions. It always has been wrong.
Yeah, but they're benefiting the most, Eutrice, because when you're looking at the chaos that's going on over there, you're looking at all of the weapons that are being sold. You know, the weapons manufacturer, they're not going out of business anytime soon.
But they're not just getting their weapons from the West. This is the same.
I know that.
They're not just getting weapons from the West. They're getting weapons from wherever they can, because they have the money to buy it in any market they wish. They're getting weapons from all over the place.
But they're getting from the United States now, who is getting like troops back on the ground in Iraq that's going on. Because right now, with what's going on over there in Kurdistan, that's where the majority of the oil is located, and it's the best oil. So if you can keep turmoil going, because their area got built up much faster and better than the rest of Iraq when all of this stuff was going on.
And well, let's see what people are saying. Let's see how people are reacting to what you offered today, Sarah. You offered quite a bit. Put a lot on the table today.
Yeah, it's always about the oil.
Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
are well.
Patricia, you're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Eutrice. I hope you are well. I think that the bulk of the listeners to your program tend to be people who have a little bit more insight, I think, than most of the populace here. And I say that because there was a poll that came out in New York yesterday or the day before, and it says that 60% of African Americans and 55% of Hispanics approve of the mayor. White voters, however, only 36% approve and 45% disapprove. And unfortunately, Eutrice, it really boggles my mind because I'm not really clear on what African Americans are basing their approval. And it says to me that we are not getting our message out widely enough. Those of us who tune in every day tune in because we want information and we want education and we want to hear an alternate point of view. But we're not getting our message out widely enough. And so I think my question today is, how do we go about doing that? Because clearly we are, the amount of information that people have at their fingertips to make decisions that are crucial to their day-to-day existence, to their day-to-day survival, is lacking. And so I really am in a quandary. I just don't know how to get that message out to the broader populace.
I hinted at that yesterday, that one of the things I'll start doing as of next week is to aggressively promote the program, promote PRN.FM as well, and to get as many people on board with telling people they know. That's the best place to start. Tell people, as many people as you know, about where you turn to for information and the kinds of conversations we have here and the kinds of information that we share with each other.
Well, you know,
That's one way to start.
And you know, Eutrice, a few weeks ago, a caller called in and said, you know, we need you back in New York. So I'm going to put my plug in and hope that if enough of us put our plugs in, maybe you'll give it some consideration.
You know, I really love New York. Of course, I spent so many years there. The thing is, we can do an equally good job no matter where we are because the technology allows us to be wherever we need to be, and we could still make an impact. What is important, I think, is that we develop systems that suit our informational needs and that respond to our informational needs, but we also aggressively have to punish those systems that are not meeting our informational needs. In New York City, for example, the mainstream media are not at all responding to the informational needs of the Black and Latino communities, although by law they are required to, under FCC guidelines, they're required to have public service programming, and they're not doing it. But people are not fighting it, and they are instead leaving it to, you know, whatever.
But you know, Eutrice, I wish... I'll give you an example. I'm not certain if you're familiar with this whole issue of affordable housing and the poor door here in New York. But as it turns out, a few African-American legislators, I'm more than happy to name them. So, for instance, you had Letitia James, who's now the public advocate. You had Jumani Williams, who is the chair of the Housing Committee in the New York City Council. And even the mayor, 2 years ago when this issue first came up, voted for it. So what I did, I actually sat down 3 weeks ago, and I wrote letters to each one of them. And the only one who has responded to me is Letitia James. And all she had to say to me was, well, she supports, you know, affordable housing. But the point I'm trying to make is that the legislators that African Americans put back in office year after year after year, who have they have absolutely no idea what the record of these people are. And I almost wish we could actually put information in their mailboxes, because that's the way the corporate structure works. They deluge these mailboxes with information, none of which is relevant to African Americans, and most of it is untrue. So, yes, I absolutely agree with you that clearly programs like PRN, programs like yours, are absolutely crucial. My quest is how to get, and we certainly, I certainly promote it 100%, 1,000%, but that still represents just a small fraction of people who mm-hmm. we need to reach. So I'm just trying to figure out a broader way and a faster way to get this message out.
Well, maybe some people would have some ideas today, but thanks for putting it on the table, though.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too, Patricia. Bye-bye. Thanks for calling. From New York, we're still in New York. Joel.
Hi there, Eutrice. I want to wish you and all of the listeners a very enjoyable Labor Day weekend. And perhaps
Thank
they
you.
Can reflect upon what has happened to labor over the last 50 years and why it's needed to be resuscitated if we're
Great.
To move forward. Having said that, I don't want to talk about labor. I'd like to just say a few words about the Ukraine because things are really heating up there.
Mm-hmm.
And beg your pardon?
I said, mm-hmm, you're right.
And, you know, this week I've been looking at a book written by the international relations expert, Zbigniew Brzezinski. In 1997, he wrote a book called The Great Chessboard, in which most of his policy is enunciated right there. And in case your listeners don't know about Brzezinski, Brzezinski is a very highly visible geopolitician who's been swimming exclusively in democratic waters ever since 1960 when he advised JFK during his presidential campaign. Then he became a national security advisor to President Jimmy Carter and was responsible for creating the insurgency support for the Mujahideen and convinced Carter to bring this rather unknown group, Al-Qaeda, into Afghanistan, and we know the history of that. But in this book, The Great Chessboard, you know, and I'm looking at it right now, I would just like to quote a few sentences from it. He argues, quote, that the struggle for global primacy would continue to be played on the Eurasian chessboard, and that as a new and important space on this chessboard, Ukraine was a geopolitical pivot because its very existence as an independent country helps to transform Russia, unquote. Then he says, quote, if Moscow regains control over the Ukraine with its 52 million people and major resources as well as access to the Black Sea, Russia would automatically again regain the wherewithal to become a powerful imperial state spanning Europe and Asia, unquote. So the unwritten script of Brzezinski, who is, after all, one of Obama's foreign policy advisors, one of the people he listens to, is to intensify the West, that means America's efforts, by means fair and foul to detach Ukraine from the Russian sphere of influence, including especially the Black Sea Peninsula, you know, with its access to the Eastern Mediterranean via the Aegean. So presently, rather than focusing on, you know, the geopolitical objectives of Russia's, quote, aggression against Ukraine, Brzezinski then turns his intentions on Putin's move on the Great Chessboard. And he says to permit Putin to have his way in the Ukraine would be, quote, similar to the two phases of Hitler's seizure of Sudetenland after Munich in 1938 and the final occupation of Prague in Czechoslovakia in early 1938, unquote. And then he finishes by saying much depends on how clearly the West conveys to the dictator in the Kremlin a partially comical imitation of Mussolini and a more menacing reminder of Hitler that NATO cannot be passive if war erupts in Europe, unquote. For should Europe be crushed with the West simply watching, the new freedom and security of Romania, Poland, and the three Baltic republics would also be threatened. So what he has done is to resuscitate the domino theory. His argument is that he urges the West to, quote, promptly recognize the current government of Ukraine as legitimate and assure privately that the Ukrainian army can count on immediate and direct Western aid so as to enhance its defense capabilities. And he finishes by saying NATO forces should be put on high alert and high readiness for some immediate airlift to Europe of U.S. airborne units, which would be politically and militarily meaningful. Pretty heavy stuff. Now, I think what Brzezinski really believes is that if you engage in this kind of brinksmanship, and engage in these kinds of threats, that the Russians will back down, because the Russians know that we have a preemptive first strike nuclear strategy. You know, we never had that. I grew up in the 1950s when John Foster Dulles was making his bellicose statements threatening every 2 weeks to bomb the Soviet Union into oblivion. But we never had a first-strike preemptive nuclear strategy. Bush created that, and then Obama enthusiastically endorsed it, and the Russians know this. And so it seems to me that we're dealing with an administration whose ideas are really following from a kind of Cold War imperial mindset, a kind of mindset that suggests, well, there won't be a war because eventually he will back down. And if he doesn't back down, all of the sanctions that we're creating will so defang the Russian economy that the government will be stabilized and will be able to put in a, you know, an alcoholic satrap like Yeltsin, and Russia will then become a junior partner in the Imperium's aim to own the world.
So, but you're also looking at some, I mean, on a psychological level, psychiatrists might call this, you know, psychosis, deep psychosis. When you look, I mean, when you really analyze what is policy or what the United States and other countries, they all are doing it. It comes from a really psychotic idea about world domination and who should rule the world. They all are mad at whoever is actually ruling the world, and they all are mad at who they see would be threats to their rightful their right to rule the world. And when you look at what, I mean, it's laid out there in very clinical ways, and he's outlining it, but when you listen to the language, when you listen to the reasoning, you see how deeply disturbed a person is, and that when I say disturbed the person is, I'm talking about in the world view, that it is logical and it is okay. It is, in fact, a desirable thing that the United States should utterly and completely dominate the entire planet. But it is wrong for Russia to, you know, you see what I'm saying? This is the problem I have with all of these geopolitical policies that develop. In the end, all of it is so unhealthy. Nobody ever takes the position, you know what? We are living in a world community of nations. How do we best work our situations out, our differences out, so that annihilation is not really a policy? You know, cooperation is a policy, interdependence is a policy, annihilation is not a policy.
Well, you know, Yatrice, I've been following, as I said, American policies since I was a little kid in the early 1950s. And the only time in the last 50 years that I've ever really felt frightened that there was a possibility of either a land war in Europe that would obviously then turn into a thermonuclear war was during the period when Khrushchev and Kennedy failed to have an agreement in Vienna in April of 61, and Kennedy said it would be a long winter. And then that followed, you know, the Soviets building the wall in Berlin, and led ultimately to the Cuban Missile Crisis. So from April of 61 to October of 62, I really felt that there was a possibility of war. And I think I have good reason to feel that way. I think history bears me out. And I never felt, even during the nuclear freeze moment in the 80s, that there was a real possibility of war between the United States and Soviet. Now I feel a little differently, that the Russian Federation and the Americans are heading towards a confrontation. And I have no great love for Putin. He's surrounded by a bunch of hedge fund managers and equity fund characters. But the United States policy really hasn't changed very much in 50 years. Its aim is to own the world. I wouldn't say dominate the world, you know, in a traditional imperial way, but to own the world. And the axiom of American policy has always been follow orders or else. And we have crossed their red line. Again, this has nothing to do with any love of Putin, but we have crossed their red line. We have insinuated our way into their sphere of influence. And let me tell you something. 27 million Russians died in the Second World War. Compare that to the 780,000 Americans who died. Another 15 million died in the First World War. And I was in the Soviet Union in 1983, and every single town and hamlet has a monument to the war dead. So even though people weren't alive, most people weren't alive when the war ended, there's a consciousness of this. And the amazing thing about American policy is that they do this so cavalierly, so nonchalantly, and with such complacency. And I think that there's a kind of madness that's associated with that as well.
I think so, too. Thank you very much, Joel, for your call today. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. I wanted to talk today, shift gears a little bit, talk about propaganda. And this kind of ties in with a couple of other callers that have called today. I think a lot of people don't understand the concept of propaganda so well. First of all, when you look at or listen to any media, there is an agenda. Obviously, everybody has an agenda. Now, propaganda comes in when the entity or person or whoever is supplying the media decides that they want to manipulate the truth and sometimes reality and also perception in order to get that agenda across. Now, I guess you could say to some extent we're being propagandized all day long, no matter whether it's through advertising or bus stops and things like that, or if it's on television or radio. Every single second of the day we're being propagandized. I wanted to quickly just point out about three examples. I'll be kind of quick with them so someone else can call in. So I'm going to kind of run through it. I called in last week about 9/11 and how that changed me forever and made me start seeking information. In particular, I pointed out that about 6 or 8 hours later, after the two Twin Towers collapsed, the Building 7 collapsed as well for no apparent reason. It wasn't hit. Now, I know people all over the country in different cities, so I've talked to a lot of people about this over the last few years. And it seems that that part of it is wiped out of most people's memories. They remember the events of the morning, but you get around to telling them about Building 7, really? Did that happen? I'm like, yeah, you don't believe me. Look it up, you know? So I'm not saying everybody, but I think the majority of people, especially the people who do not listen to your show, don't even recall that that happened. And so that's a tactic in propaganda. I call it omission or deletion of real events in order to real events that don't fit the narrative you're trying to put across. So that struck me. Then the second example I'd like to give is with the Michael Brown shooting killing recently. I was talking to a couple of friends the other day. And all of a sudden, one of them, we're talking about what happened, and all of a sudden, one of them comes out and says, well, you know, black parents need to give values to their kids like they did 30, 40, 50 years ago. And if he hadn't been out stealing, then who knows what's going to happen when you're out stealing? I said, wait a minute. Hold on a second. How do you know he was stealing? Well, they showed the videotape of him doing this and doing that. I said, first of all, I wouldn't care if the man killed somebody or whatever and he was wanted at the time. Still, that doesn't mean that he deserves to get blown away. Yeah, no, I'm not saying that, but, you know, he was out doing that. How do you know that? Well, they showed the video. I said, second of all, this video that they showed, it turns out they had to come out later and apologize and say that the guy was not stealing, and that the owner of the store, the clerk, never even called 911. This was just an altercation when he was trying to prevent Ms. Michael Brown from leaving. So that is what I call deliberate insertion of an alternate perception. So in other words, they're manipulating perception in order to get across the fact that this was a bad person and maybe what he got, he deserved, you know. But when they get around to issuing the correction, and they do this on purpose, they put the information out there, and you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. They put the information out there, and it's all blown up in the media. Everybody hears about it. It's on every show you can imagine, on the front page of every paper. And then they print the retraction or the correction, and it's on page 16 of the paper. You do a little five-second spot on some show, and then most people don't even know that the correction was made.
Okay, so then, the point about your propaganda, what is the point you're making?
Well, that is the second example I'm giving about propaganda. That's a deliberate insertion of a different reality that, or perception that what then really happened, and that's another tactic is what I'm saying.
But by whom? In a situation, the situation that you have highlighted, the situations
well,
that
okay,
you have highlighted.
Okay, let me go a little bit deeper into that example. The FBI told this police chief that you shouldn't release that videotape. You know, Department of Justice told him, do not release that videotape. It has nothing really to do with the shooting. He took it upon himself to release that videotape. He was almost under orders, not really under orders not to release it, but he decided to do it anyway. Now, why would he have a motive for doing that? It's because he wants to protect his officer, and he wants to protect his own position in the town and all this, and he wants this to be a quote-unquote justified shooting. So that's his motive.
All right.
So we pinpointed who, in that instance, was controlling that little bit of propaganda. So, you know, and my third example, I'm going to have to be real quick now, is the events with this so-called beheading tape. Now, I heard you mention it. Before that, I hadn't taken a look at it. I'd heard of it. I took a look at this tape. And within about 2 or 3 minutes, I knew this was all a sham. Because, number one, I've been dealing with... Now, let me, before I say this, I'm not saying that this guy wasn't killed. He may be dead. I'm not saying that Foley wasn't killed. I'm not saying that ISIS is not a bunch of bad guys, or Islamic State, or whatever they're calling themselves this week. These are a bunch of ruthless, bad people. What I am saying is, this particular video, this man did not get beheaded at this time. Along with what Sarah pointed out, and I won't repeat. I mean, this guy has a knife we have knives in our kitchen that are way bigger than that. And like Sarah indicated, you cannot saw through someone's neck with that. You just can't. It's not going to happen. You're going to reach all this tough tissue. And then what I can say is that I've been dealing with video and audio for 25 years in all different forms. And I'd like to point out a few things. First of all, these people had professional lighting. They had sun reflectors. Obviously, they had professional lighting out there. They had these wireless microphones with battery packs. And you can clearly see them on the people in the video. We've never seen this before in any kind of terrorism video where they go through all this trouble. It's usually a shaky handheld camera or whatever. Also, they've done some professional editing. I've seen both versions, the cleaned up version for YouTube and the original version. And they cut, they edit the video in about 3-4 places. They change camera angles. In fact, they're using more than one camera. Because simultaneously as the person's talking, they shift from a front view to a side view. This is a Hollywood production. And then when the person goes to saw on Foley's neck. I know this is getting a little gory, but he's going back and forth about five or six times, and people have pointed this out, that there is no blood coming out. And then they quickly cut when he reaches about his fifth or sixth time going across his neck. That's totally staged. So then they cut the video, and you see the body lying there with the head on the back of the body. And as Sarah indicated, I grew up like Sarah did. You know, we killed animals on the farm all the time. And first of all, the guy's standing there when he's talking to the next journalist and telling Obama it depends on what he does next. He has no blood on him. And presumably this is right after you just beheaded somebody. He's clean as a whistle. And the body laying there has no, doesn't have any massive amounts of blood around it. So obviously this is a staged production. I'm not going to get into who did it and why and all this, but we know who has an interest in doing it and what that interest is.
Well,
so that's another form of propaganda.
Well, there's deliberate propaganda, and then there is just plain old disinformation, and there is basically the manipulation of the public mind and mindset. That's basically
Absolutely.
What all of this is about, manipulating
Absolutely.
People's thoughts in order to manipulate their actions.
Exactly. And Eutrice, I can even say that the reason why is similar to what Sarah said. Well, you saw what happened when they tried to go into Syria with no apparent good reason. The American people said, no, you're not going to do it. And they backed down. So ever since then, they've been trying to find a way to maneuver themselves into Syria the way they did in Libya. The first event was all these people trapped on a mountain, supposedly 10, 11,000 Yazidis or whatever they call them, trapped on a mountain. We got to go save them. You know, it turns out to be 1,000 or 1,100 of them, and some of them have been living there all the time, and they don't even want to leave. So this is manipulation, trying to go back into Syria, go back into Iraq and bomb Syria. This is what they're trying to do. And then the first ploy was all these people on the mountain. Second ploy is this group, because they keep, you notice they keep changing the name. First it was Islamic State of Libya, or Iraq and Libya. Then it's Islamic State of Iran, and what, guess who? Syria.
I mean, the Islamic State, let us all agree, you know, people are looking at this, and I had to say that just 2 days ago. This is such an extremely illogical situation, and yet people are expecting things to work logically out. They're expecting order out of absolute chaos, logic out of total, logical actions and policies and whatnot. It's just not going together. So it's a state of war, and nothing is normal in a state of war. These folks, we still don't know what the the popular thinking is about what it is they're about, but we really have no idea of what the ultimate plan is. We know what they're saying, we know what it is that they're doing, but that doesn't mean that we know exactly what the plan is either.
Right.
We don't know what the United States plan is. We are all hostage to these ultra-secret policies and ideas. All we know is that the value that we have as the population to all of these folks, the value we have is that we can be manipulated either to support them or to oppose the other. That's it.
Right. But this is the purpose, Eutrice, of propaganda, and the reason for it is because they want the public to be manipulated. Unfortunately, most of the American people are not as astute as you and the people who listen to your show are, and I'll bet if they did a poll right now and tried to go attack Syria, that there may be more than half the American people on board with it, because you got to realize this is an American purported to be or represented on tape as being beheaded. So I guarantee you if they did a survey, it would be totally different than it was last time when they tried to do Syria. And this is the whole reason, to get the approval or the most of the American people. This is the reason they're doing that. Now, what their whole agenda is, I don't really know about all of that, but obviously this here is they want something, and they want the American people to be on board with it.
And, I mean, the terror is real. Today, Britain has upped its terror alert to severe. They expect to be attacked. They don't know that it is imminent, but they expect an attack from ISIS or ICE, the Islamic State, whatever it is they're calling themselves now. So these are real things that are happening in our world. And you and I and people who are part of the, quote, general public, unquote, we have no way of influencing any of this. We're sitting here basically as vulnerable as the rest of the world. We don't know what it is that we can do to stop these awful wheels from rolling. But they're rolling. We didn't create ISIS, but it was created. We didn't decide that, you know, a terrorist group is what the American people needed to support, but that's what the American people supported. The government has yet to own up and fess up to the truth of it. They're not discussing the link of the United States to these terrorist groups by literally forming them or helping them to come into being and supporting them and supplying them with weapons and giving them essentially momentum and creating them. The U.S. is not telling us that. And it would be so refreshing if, for once, we can see in our own domestic policy a refreshing approach to say, look, folks, this we have to deal with the fact that we're dealing now with a problem that we actually helped to create. And absolutely, one of the things that we should be doing from this point on is to be very careful about how we construct our policies, our foreign policy. We can't continue to do things that in the end will come back and haunt us. Thank you so much for DX for your call today. That brings us to the end of our program today. I hope it was useful. I hope you found it so. On Monday, of course, we will not be doing regular programming. We are off, so we'll see each other next on Tuesday. Keep it right here. Richard Martin with Wake Up Call is next. And drop me a note at leadstories@gmail.com or on Facebook, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. And do yourselves a favor, really. It's been an intense week, and you need to just kind of unwind and just stay loose a little bit. Give yourselves over to your friends and family and enjoy their company and their fraternity and just have a very good, enjoyable time with people you know and love. And we will come back to each other on Tuesday. And in the meantime, of course, it's a pleasure and a great privilege always to be in your company.